Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Speaking of Premier League, let's talk football, let's talk Premier League, and also let's talk about what's going on in the FA Cup with the top teams. Kenny Cunningham is with us. Kenny, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. All good.
I want to start with, not usual for us to start with a situation like Watford, but it's great when you set a record like Watford have for being the first team to sack three managers in a season. A remarkable, remarkable scenario that they find themselves in with two games left to go, 3 points clear of the relegation zone. Even if you've had a massive fight with Nigel Pearson, maybe you should let him see the season out and then sack him.
I wouldn't agree with that necessarily. Yeah, I think there has been a huge turnover of managers of the club the past couple of seasons, but I think by and large you'd have to say it's worked for them. I take your point on the surface. That's probably the general consensus. You know, what are they thinking of? What are they doing? Sacking the manager with two games of the season to go. But if they've been looking at performances of late, and particularly that first half against West Ham, I mean, that was a huge game. I mean, that was a huge game for both sides. Nobody was underestimating the importance of a win for either team in that particular game. I mean, it was guaranteed survival for any team that won that game, as is the case with West Ham now that they've won it. And the kind of performance levels in that first half would have been set the alarm bells ringing in the Watford boardroom. Okay, you can get beaten any game of football at any given time, but just kind of the application of the players, the kind of mentality in that first 45 minutes was way below what you would have expected. Even the intensity, Jared, you know, getting around the pitch, making tackles, making runs off the ball, and it just wasn't there. So really, when you look at it, after that initial, oof, Watford have sacked the manager, what are they doing? If you actually look at it in a little bit more detail, I don't think it's that surprising, particularly with these owners. And I'd actually reserve judgment till after the season in terms of where Watford have finished before I'd commit myself to the opinion that they've made a huge error or a big gaffe in terms of sacking Nigel Pearson.
But how much can happen in two games, Kenny? Like, it's an unbelievably weird time to sack somebody. Like, I get the situation with Watford's past and all that, but it's two games.
But exactly. I'd use that as the counter argument, to be honest with you. You know, we see the kind of bounce effect on in terms of a new manager coming in, and whether somebody comes in from the outside, I mean, I haven't heard if they've actually appointed anybody as yet. I'm not sure if you have, whether that'll be an eternal appointment, somebody on the coaching staff, or they're literally jetting somebody in from the outside. We'll kind of wait and see, but obviously they're looking for that kind of bit of a bounce and a bit of a reaction from the dressing room. It's almost like a little bit of shock treatment, CPR for the dressing room. You might just get some kind of reaction out of them, because there's some talent in that dressing room. I mean, I didn't think they'd be in this position, but it hasn't been, even apart from the West Ham game, lads, it hasn't been great since they've come back post-lockdown. I mean, I wasn't particularly impressed with how they handled the period away from the competitive football, to be honest with you. I felt there was a lot of kind of negativity around the club during that period. A lot of people very vocal, a number of the players, their captain in particular, a lot of reasons given why they didn't want to come back and play football. And when push came to shove, that's exactly what happened. Their captain never returned. A couple of the players took their lead from him, didn't come back, and that was only the individual training, didn't come back to the football club. Even their manager, to be honest with you, I read a comment from Nigel Pearson to the effect that he was hoping, he was praying to God that there wouldn't be a fatality amongst the footballing fraternity off the back of this COVID-19. So all of that for me, to be honest with you, didn't lend itself to a real kind of positive mindset coming back to football. So maybe it has been such a huge surprise that he hasn't got the type of reaction from the players that he would have wanted. But there is some real quality there, particularly in wide area. Sarr for me and Welbeck are still going to be instrumental for them in the next couple of games. But there's two difficult games, lads. I mean, it's Arsenal away last game of the season and Manchester City at home. And they're really in trouble. They're in real trouble. I mean, it looks as if Bournemouth probably only have to win their last game this season with the kind of goal difference potentially to get themselves out of trouble. So I'm actually not shocked and surprised by the decision. And ultimately, it might prove to be the right one.
Okay, let's go on and talk about the FA Cup semi-final this weekend. Let's talk about David De Gea, right? What do you do? What do you do if you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and week in, week out, oh, he's the best goalkeeper in the world, I still have faith in him, and then he does that twice in a match. What do you do?
Yeah, I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure if it's a massive decision for Solskjaer to make. I think he's backed him enough now, Solskjaer. I mentioned some time ago there might be a decision he'd have to make in the summer. Dean Henderson coming back to the football club potentially from Sheffield United. He's had a great season there. I think it's a big step up coming from Sheffield United. Don't get me wrong, to the regular Manchester United goalkeeper. Michael Phelan told me he was going to stick with the Gea. They gave him the big contract. Publicly, he's come out and supported the goalkeeper time and time again. So I think he's going to stick with him. I don't think see anything changing. I think the Gea will be there next season. As long as Solskjaer is certain that the guy is focused, he's totally committed to the football club. I don't think there'll be a big change there. I take your point, Jerry, in terms of mistakes, and there's been a number of them over the past, maybe go back 12 months, 18 months. He hasn't been at the level the last couple of years for Manchester United that he was a couple of years before. That's an absolute given. But I certainly wouldn't write him off, the guy. There'll be a bit of noise around him, I'm sure, over maybe the next couple of weeks. But I don't envisage a change in the summer. I think he'll stick with him. I think it's the right thing to do. I think he will bounce back, De Gea. And I think the more interesting issues around the Manchester United team are in different areas of the pitch.
Well, let's stick with the goalkeeper for a minute. Because what do you do then with Henderson? Because I've just checked his age there. Henderson turned 23 last March, so he's not 24 until next March. Do you bring Henderson back? And so next time De Gea has an issue, it's like, Grant, we now have a replacement, and like bring him in. Or do you leave Henderson for one more season to be out there in the world becoming much better by getting 45, 60 games under his belt next season? How do you manage that resource that you have?
I don't think you take him back. I don't think you can. First of all, I don't think Henderson would be happy to come back and sit on the bench, having had a taste of Premiership football, particularly at Sheffield United, and kind of the plaudits which he's had. And obviously, his game has improved, his kind of mindset, confidence levels, etc. Even a bit of an ego thing as well, Jair. From Dean Henderson's point of view, I don't think there's any way he'd want to come back and sit on the bench and play second fiddle to David De Gea on the off chance he has a bad run of games and he might get an opportunity. So from Henderson's point of view, I'm sure there's no way him or his representatives would want their player to come back and sit on the bench at the football club. And even I think that sends the wrong message to David De Gea by bringing Henderson back and sitting him on the bench. Solskjaer indirectly, I think Jared is telling De Gea, I've actually lost a bit of confidence in you here. I can't afford to let this goalkeeper go out alone for another year because I really haven't got confidence.
Yeah, but is that not fair enough? Is he not within his rights to say, what are you doing? Like, privately, what are you doing week in, week out? You're making these mistakes and it's costing us. It's cost us placing the cup final here. It's cost us enough points now at this stage that we'd be actually comfortably in third and probably already guaranteed Champions League football. How do you pressurise a goalkeeper to play better? Like, in a normal scenario, you'd have a left back who was making mistakes. You buy another left back and let them fight it out and whoever's the best man wins.
Yeah, I think you're right. The goalkeeper's position almost stands alone. It's quite a unique position. I think he will have those conversations with De Gea. Jair, probably not as dramatic a fashion of you suggested there with your high-pitched voice, but yeah, I think he will. But that comes back to good man management, Jair. That's what good managers do. They sit players down, they have conversations, they get into their head, they say exactly the right things at the right moment to get them on side and to get them back on track. So I'm sure he will do that. I don't think it'll be a case of shouting and screaming match inside the confines of Carrington training ground, but I'm sure he'll have a mature, sensible conversation with De Gea and just get him in his head, because that's all it is. We know how good a goalkeeper he is, but he has been making too many mistakes. So it's just a case, I think, of just getting him in the right kind of headspace, saying the right things and getting him kind of refocused and maybe a little remotivated to a certain extent for the start of the next season.
Okay. Do you not start Sergio Romero in the next game, Kenny? Do you not actually lay down a marker and say, if this is the standard at which you are playing at Manchester United, it's simply not good enough? It still gives you the avenue for De Gea to work his way back into the starting team. But is a private conversation enough to send a positive message to the rest of the dressing room?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right on. It's a good point. I think you have to look at it in terms of the effect a decision like that, when you take a player of the Gaelic stature out of the team, the effect that has on the rest of the dressing room. I think that has to be a small factor as well. I don't think that'll happen, to be honest with you. I think there's an argument to be made for it. Maybe taking him out of the team, and maybe the message that sends around the dressing room. I don't think with a player of the Gaelic standing, that's the thing you want to do. When in fact you can lose a player, certain players, you might say it's the wrong kind of attitude, but you take that course with certain players and you lose them totally. They kind of switch off. That's it. You've humiliated me. I'm having a bad time. I need your support. You've made it even worse. You know, you've thrown me under a bus by taking me out of the team. You've ridiculed me, you've hung me out to dry. Some players will take that attitude, so that's exactly the position you don't want to be in. So yeah, I take your point. You've got to think the player first and foremost, and the dressing room, and you know, I do have two massive games coming up, West Ham at home and Leicester away. But for me, by taking the Gaia out and bring another goalkeeper in, it only heaps massive pressure on that your second goalkeeper, whoever it is, who comes in for those last two games. I don't think there's a decision to be made, really. I think the Gaelic play these last two games are absolutely huge games for me, not just in the context of Manchester United season, but in terms of going forward and potentially Champions League football for this group of players next season.
The last thing I just have to ask you about in this, Kenny, is that there's often been a case where if a goalkeeper starts to lose their confidence, it can be a very, very tough position to get it back. Like, I may just be kind of having a little bit of a tunnel vision here, because there's been some very important examples in recent history. When you've got Joe Hart at Manchester City, when he started to lose things, it was very, very difficult, it seemed, for him to get it back. It seemed it was the case as well with the two goalkeepers Liverpool had before they brought in Alisson. That is the fear that Manchester United now have, where they look at Manchester City and Liverpool. Not only have they spent big to get in a good replacement, the goalkeepers that departed before that, once they started to go on a downward slump, they couldn't arrest that, basically.
No, it's a good point. And that's why I think there is a decision to be made in surrounding the Gaia. And I think if we're talking about Solskjaer having those conversations with the Gaia potentially over the summer, you know, season's going to finish more or less in a week's time, although they have the Europa football coming down the line. But I think on the flip side, if Solskjaer was to get a sense talking to the Gaia, that there was a little bit of unhappiness there, that he'd lost a little bit of motivation, he was looking back towards Spain, or homesick, or personal issues, or just a lack of whatever it was. I think if the Solskjaer gets a sense of that, having these discussions that we're talking about with the Gaia over the coming weeks, well, I think then there is an argument for taking that bold step, that right, it's in the club's best interest to take Henderson back from Sheffield United. We feel as if he has all the attributes, confidence-wise, at the highest level it's ever been. Yes, there's always an element of the risk in terms of bringing him back into the cauldron of Old Trafford. Can his personality handle it? Can he deal with the kind of pressure of being Manchester United's number one? But that's a possibility. He could show the guy that get a healthy transfer fee, get him off their wage bill, and you'd like to think he potentially has got the ready-made replacement in Henderson there. So I'm not saying that's no way that's going to happen, but that'll all be dependent on those conversations Solskjaer has with De Gea, and just being very intuitive as a manager, get the sense off the player. Can I trust this fella going for the next 2 to 4 years? Because that's the kind of what Solskjaer's looking at with this group of players now at Manchester United, the age profile, in terms of how can they develop and what they can achieve in that next period of time, and can De Gea be an integral part of that? You know, has he got the kind of personality, has he got the motivation to get himself back to that level that he has been at previously, lads? So they're the kind of questions I suppose Solskjaer wrestle with maybe over the coming weeks and months.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Just one last point on that, and we don't even need to weather the storm or labour too much. The next 6 months is probably going to be football behind closed doors, so it might be the perfect time to introduce a goalkeeper to a club where there isn't actually going to be that cauldron of pressure and stuff. So maybe that'll factor into the thinking. The game itself, and you were about to say that there are other areas of the field where they need to strengthen, was that the difference between the sides? Actually, the goalkeeping errors were not incidental, because they were very important in that they resulted in goals, but that actually Manchester United aren't quite ready to be competing on a bunch of different fronts at the moment because they don't have the strength and depth. And at some point, your squad is going to get caught out in big games when every game is a big game.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Jer, but the reason why Manchester United got beat yesterday, you looked at the starting 11s yesterday, United's team sheet came in terms of the shape of the team, the personnel, and I never fancied United to win that game. And it wasn't because they hadn't got better players, Jared, because they were sat on the bench. So I think you're probably right in indicating the strength and depth of the Chelsea squad at the moment is probably superior to that of Manchester United. And that's a fair point. I think if Manchester United had been able to put, United played well that back three system towards the tail end just before a lockdown, lads. Men are going to Chelsea and playing really well. Luke Shaw played left of a three. And I think they had Martial played up front with Rashford. So I think if you tinker with the personnel with that particular formation, I think it actually quite suits the Manchester United team. But it just wasn't strong enough. You kind of James up front, and you know, Pogba sat on the bench as well. That bit of a lack of a creative spark in midfield, and Boy in at the back, who's, you know, you feast or famine, you never know what you're going to get with him. So yeah, the team just wasn't strong enough, Jared. But I could understand it because of the importance of the games coming up for Manchester United, particular at home against West Ham, funny enough, off the back of the less resulted Tottenham. I mean, a convincing victory against West Ham in a couple of days' time pretty much guarantees Champions League football, regardless of the outcome of the final game against Leicester. So clearly, for over the last week or so, Solskjaer's been looking at the fixtures, and he's had to make a decision and prioritise certain games. And he's looked at the game yesterday and the game midweek against West Ham United, and come to the conclusion, and the right one for me, that the home game against West Ham United is far more significant for this Manchester United team presently and going forward than that FA Cup semi-final. And that's the sobering reality. And as I said, a convincing win against West Ham midweek, with the introduction of those players who kind of missed out, Martial coming back in, and Pogba, I imagine, to come back into the team. They'll revert back to that 4-3-3 shape, which has been so successful for them since post-lockdown. And ultimately, it'll probably be proved right.
The talk over the last few weeks, Kenny, had been whether or not Manchester United can challenge the top two next season in the Premier League. I think possibly a more accurate question would be, can Chelsea be that team to potentially break into the top two? Like, it's been an outstanding season for them, and the news off the pitch kind of gets better when you see the likes of Kai Havertz saying he wants to leave Bayer Leverkusen this summer. If players available this summer, Chelsea look best placed to actually bring them in. And with a manager of Frank Lampard's qualities still learning, it's an unbelievably exciting time to be a supporter of Chelsea, I'd imagine, to be a player involved with Chelsea Football Club. Can they get to that next level next season and actually potentially start to break the top two mould?
I think they could. Whether they can break the top two depends on those kind of marquee signers which they can bring in the summer. And depending on who those players are, Kai Havertz, we've spoken about him before, an outstanding player. Just didn't feel as if that central midfield area in relation to those attacking midfielders was necessarily priority from a Chelsea's point of view. You've got the likes of Kovacic, Loftus-Cheek, Mason Mount, who can operate in those kind of advanced midfield areas. But clearly, a player of the quality of Havertz comes available, you've got to be interested. He might take the opinion Lampard, as good as those players are, he might be prepared to offload a couple of those players, Loftus-Cheek in particular, and get money in the door and actually go and invest in someone of the quality of Havertz. But I think he gets one or two of those marquee players in. For me, it's still a centre-half. We spoke about it before. We know where the areas are. We spoke about it before. Centre-half, for me, he's still searching for an ideal pair in there. He went to a back three. It worked kind of reasonably well. But if his favourite system is going to be a kind of 4-3-3 system, which we've seen for most of the season, for me, he hasn't got a natural pair in there in centre-half. He dropped Rudiger out of the team a couple of weeks ago, wasn't happy with his performances. And he's constantly searching for partnership there at centre-half. He hasn't got a left-back. He's crying out for left-back. But there's a few good ones of them around the place. He could potentially bring one of them in. So very exciting times. You're absolutely right. I think it's a hugely talented squad. Profile, the age of the squad, it's only going to get better. But in terms of challenging, actually breaking up that top two, I think it is possible for the next season. But he has to get those two additional signings for me. Left back, centre half, and that central midfield. For me, another central midfield player of high quality, defensively minded player. For me, and they're not far off. They're actually, there's the potential there to break up that top two next season.
Really? That good?
Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I think it is that good. Yeah, I really do. I mean, Ziyech's a wonderful player. I don't know if people have seen enough of him. I'm really impressed with him the past couple of seasons. Wenger's a very dangerous player, versatility as well. That's what I like about Chelsea, the versatility of their players. They're operating off, Pulisic can operate off either flanks, even as a number 10. Werner's the same. Mason Mount, very flexible, it can accommodate him in any different areas of the pitch. I actually didn't like Chelsea's midfield too yesterday, Kovacic and Jorginho. I mean, there's no future in those two in centre midfield, but Kante will come back into the team. And I go, but I look at those two teams yesterday, lads, and I think I had this conversation with you last week. I look at both those teams yesterday, and one player for me to go into both of those teams that would take him almost to the next level is Declan Rice. Declan Rice goes into, is better than any of those defenders who played in either of those back threes yesterday, Manchester United and Chelsea's. He makes those back threes significantly better. He goes into any of those midfield yesterday. The Chelsea midfield, he improves dramatically, and the Manchester United midfield, the pairing of Matic and Fred, he improves dramatically because of his all-round game. You can't pigeonhole him as a defence-minded midfielder or an attacking midfielder. It's his all-round game, Declan's. His mobility, athleticism, that defensive mindset he has, his ability actually to play forward and be penetrating with his pass and actually go box to box, which you don't see a lot of, which he can do as well. So looking at those both those teams, you're asking me, can Chelsea make a charge next season, break up the top two? Can Manchester United make a charge and break up the top two? If there was one player out there at the moment for me who could take him potentially to that next level because of his ability to be accommodated in both positions at centre half and centre midfield and actually excel in both those positions, it's Declan Rice. And I'd be absolutely amazed if one of those teams don't make a serious push to get him to their football clubs in the summer.
All right, Kenny, we'll let you go. Good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us.
Nice one, lads.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.